Hey guys, this is your host Nitin Binhani and a very warm welcome to my startup podcast channel Jazair Audio, where we share real stories with real learnings. Richard Parker is a distinguished M&A expert. He has led successful acquisitions of 13 companies ranging from $50,000 to $200+ million. He is also author of How to Buy a Good Business at a Great Price. The book has sold 100,000 copies. Being an advisor in M&A transactions surpassing $2 billion. In this podcast, Richard will share his valuable insights on why should you only buy an existing profitable business, how to source potential businesses and conduct due diligence. Finally, how do you integrate the new business successfully within your business? So let's welcome Richard. Hey Richard, welcome to Jazair Audio. Pleasure to have you here.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with what are the key reasons or the advantages of buying an existing business rather than starting one from scratch?
So with an existing business, you immediately have customers, you have employees, you have systems, you have processes, procedures, you have revenues, you do it right, you have profits. Versus a startup where everything is a guess. You have no idea what's coming around the corner. It's nothing more than a thesis. And so with an existing business, when you go about this the right way and you do this in a manner that is proven and way we explain people how to go about this process, the idea is that you get to the keys to the business on a Monday and you should be able to take a paycheck on the Friday versus a startup where you have no idea what's coming down the road. Everything is just, it sounds great, but it's just a plan and nothing is proven versus an entity which is ongoing and it's already gone past the whole startup stage. You know, in North America, 96% of startups fail within the first 5 years. So when you buy an existing business, you've already passed that whole difficult startup phase.
What really motivates business owners to go for M&A opportunities?
That's actually a great question, because one of the things that's really important for current and existing business owners to understand, there's two ways to grow your business. You can grow it organically, which is interesting and wonderful and kind of romantic. And it's, you know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to put into it to grow the business and scale it. Or the second option is to grow the business through acquisition, strategic acquisitions or ancillary acquisitions. And a lot of small businesses, unfortunately, don't think that way because they think an acquisition is outside of their area of expertise or possibilities, or that's just reserved for big companies and mergers and what have you. And it's absolutely not the case at all. It's a huge opportunity. And you can grow your business either acquiring competitors or bolting on ancillary businesses that make sense of products and services that you can sell to your existing customer base. So I would urge business owners to really think about this idea of growth through acquisition.
Okay, so how do you source the potential candidates?
So this becomes a real challenge, and there's a solution to it. There's two parts. Obviously, if you're a current and existing business owner, you can identify who your competitors are or what ancillary businesses make sense. So you want to approach those individuals in a very non-confrontational way. So for the existing business owners, it's easier. For people that are just looking to acquire a business or their first business, this becomes one of the most challenging components of the business buying process for individuals. And it shouldn't be that way, because what you want to be able to do is the first thing is you have to, of course, get educated about the process. But what you want to do is you want to get really aligned with what is your greatest skill set. Because the single most important piece of the entire business buying process for an individual is making sure that they buy the right business for them. All the other pieces, if you happen to overpay a little bit or you miss one little point related to an investigation or the due diligence, that's not catastrophic by any means. But if you buy the wrong business, the business that you're not suited to own, that is catastrophic. And so any individual looking to buy a business, the first thing they have to get very aligned with is what is their greatest skill set, whether it be sales, marketing, operations, putting a plan together, organizing a team, logistics, putting processes, procedures into place, whatever that single greatest skill that they have. And everybody has one skill that's the top of their list. That particular skill has to be the driving factor of the revenue and profits of any business they consider purchasing. You have to marry that. And you can't confuse expertise with experience. Just because you worked in a particular industry doesn't make you an expert in a particular skill. It just gives you experience in an industry. You want to, you know, double click and find out what it is that you did in that industry or those industries, that particular skill that you have that's above all the other ones that you possess.
Great. How do you conduct a thorough research and due diligence on these potential businesses to acquire?
So as far as the right fit, It comes with the alignment of your skill set. That's the first thing at the top of the list, making sure that the business, whatever it is that you do best, is the single most important driving factor, the revenue and profits of any business you consider purchasing. So the right fit, and the way to go about that is to go look at a bunch of different businesses. You know, at the beginning, you start off with a very wide, open-minded approach, and then you try to squeeze out something very tight at the end. Meaning at the beginning, if you're not sure, you want to meet with business owners in a wide array of industries to find out what they do every day, what drives the business. Similarly, if you find a particular type of business that you think may align with your skill set, you want to speak with other owners of similar types of businesses. So you'll really get a crystal clear idea of what the owner does every day and what drives that business. So that's the first part related to fit. As far as due diligence is concerned, you raise a great question, Nathan, because people get obsessed with the numbers. And the numbers are important, but numbers are numbers. Numbers don't lie. People lie. It's math. And so dealing with the financial piece, as long as the books and records are in good shape, then numbers are the numbers. That's the easiest part of the investigation or due diligence to deal with. But then there's several more categories. We identify 10 categories in addition to the financials that have to be investigated, which are the assets of the business, the sales, the marketing, the employees, the systems, competition, customers, contracts, suppliers, legal and corporate issues. And you want to go down that list in a hierarchy. For example, once you've dealt with the financials and you're comfortable, the financials make sense. So then you want to look at the, understand the marketing and the systems and the customers, competitions, and the overall marketplace, because you're using the financials to determine what the business has done in the past. You're going to consider the present, but you're buying it for the future. So you want to get a really terrific understanding of what the industry look like, what the market looks like, what the customers look like, what the competition looks like, so that you can get a reasonable understanding. Nothing is guaranteed, of course, but a reasonable understanding of what the future is going to look like based on what you know about the past. So it's really important for prospective business owners to understand you want to get the financials dealt with, but there's far more to investigate than just the financials. Pay for the past, you think about the present, but you're buying the business for the future. And you want to make sure that if all things remain status quo, the business is going to continue as is with you as the new owner. And you also need to understand what are the growth prospects. So that's the way I address due diligence, and it's worked repeatedly, is not getting neurotic about the financials. They're important, but you can address those pretty quickly. It's all these other aspects that make the whole picture come together.
Is there a template that you follow for due diligence, or am I wrong here?
No, you're 100% correct. You know, we, in our materials, we have a 200-point due diligence checklist that walks people through all of these 11 aspects, because there's 11 components, what you need to know and learn, and the materials that you need to investigate it, and where you should be bringing in professionals. Like, you know, as far as the legal, the corporate issues, the entity setup, you want to have your attorney or lawyer look at those aspects. You want to have your accountant involved in the financial piece. But all the other points, as a buyer, you want to investigate them. And one thing that I would really urge people to do when you're looking at a business, as soon as the moment that the business becomes of interest to you, that's when your due diligence starts. You don't wait till there's a contract or an agreement in place, and then you have a limited period to conduct your formal due diligence. You want to start doing that immediately. And certain things like the industry, the market, the competition, those are things that you can start to investigate immediately. Because once you have meetings with sellers, you come to an agreement, and then you might have a limited period of 30 days to conduct your formalized due diligence. You want to be able to have a lot of that already done.
So what you're hinting at is to do your homework early and well.
That's exactly it. Do your homework, do it early.
What kind of financial analysis or methodologies that you use to evaluate a business?
Well, the first thing is you're going to have historical financials, past year's profit and loss statements, to be able to give you a glimpse of the past of the business. So the first thing that you want to do, adopt the mindset that while growth is very sexy, but sustainability is valuable. What I mean by that is it's very easy to sit back and think about all the wonderful things that you could do to grow the business. But the first thing you want to make sure as a buyer is to make sure that when the business, that when you take over the business, that assuming all things remain status quo, that the business is going to continue on its same path and trajectory as far as what the earnings have been. So you look at the prior year's P&L statements, and you're able to identify what the adjusted earnings are, but then you need to dig in. And when I say dig in, you want to look at what are issues within the financials that may cause a problem for you as a new owner going forward. Certain things such as customer concentration. Are there any customers that represent a disproportionate amount of the business, where if that client leaves, the business could decline dramatically? Are there issues related to if there's multiple locations? Are there leases that won't renew? Are there any type of environmental issues? And so all of these issues that can drastically impact the performance of the business going forward are what you need to evaluate. So you take the past financials and make the assumption that all things remaining status quo, that's what you're going to inherit and continue. But it's the evaluation of how the business can be grown and any issues that can surface that can fundamentally alter the landscape of the business are what you need to evaluate.
Now, let's talk about negotiation strategies or tactics. How do you secure the best win-win deal for all stakeholders in terms of an acquisition?
Well, I appreciate what you're saying as far as win-lose, and I do agree with you, but I don't agree with win-win. What I agree with is something right in the middle, which is when an individual or a company acquires a business, the buyer is assuming the largest part of the risk because it's their money, their future that's on the line here. And so what should happen is the buyer should win because they're assuming the largest part of the risk and the seller should be reasonably happy. You don't want win-lose, but you can't have win-win. Someone's got to be a winner. And the buyer should be winning because they assume the largest part of the risk. And I must tell you that even when, you know, I represent sellers in my M&A business, the vast majority of my business is buyer education, but I do represent sellers on a limited basis. And I tell all prospective clients right from the beginning, understand you're not going to win. You've got to be reasonably happy with the deal in the term. The buyer deserves to win because they're assuming the largest part of the risk. And that's really important. And then the other parts of negotiation are things, it's philosophical the way you go into this. You have to understand that at the top of the list, if you're able to soothe the seller's pain, you're going to come out very well as a buyer. And what I mean by that is every seller has their issues, their hot points. It's whether it's related to the deal terms, whether it's related to the down payment, whether it's related to their legacy, whether they want to make sure it's the right person that takes over and takes care of their employees and take care of their customers. There's other sellers that they don't care at all. They just want as much money as possible and get out as fast as possible. And so understanding the seller's hot buttons right from the beginning are very, very important. And there's really three ingredients that in negotiation to get deal done. And I'm going to expand upon these. But when the buyer and seller like and trust each other, and the buyer wants to buy and the seller wants to sell, then you can't stop them from getting a deal done. And so what's very important is where I see buyers go make terrible mistakes is they go in there like with guns a-blazing, as we say in America. Like they're going in there and they want to just kill everything in their way. And it's really a terrible, terrible approach. While these conversations and negotiations, they should start out as very non-confrontational discussions. You want to be able to get to understand the seller. You want to understand their motivations. You want to have a nice, meaningful conversations with them. Because if you can establish trust and credibility, you can get through every issue and problem. And so it's really important to have this human relationship as the foundation for the negotiation and be willing to give in some points to get some other points. You certainly don't have to win every point. Philosophically understanding that this should be a meaningful conversation with the seller and not all of it is going to get resolved first, second, or third meeting is really, really important. And another point that I want to make is don't let anybody else do your negotiating. Establish that human relationship with the seller and then walk through the points in a good way. And when you feel that you've reached your absolute threshold, if you will, for example, on the purchase price, be willing to move a little more because the benefits of business ownership are so wonderful. And last point that I would make is I've always been of the ilk and I've bought 14 companies with a wide range of acquisition prices from $50,000 to over $200 million. What I've always tried to take the approach is, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Seller, I'll pay your price, you take my terms. The advantage to the buyer is earned during the deal terms, whether that be performance-based terms, whether it be seller financing, whether it be earnouts. Those are all pieces of the deal where the terms could become so advantageous to the buyer that the purchase price almost doesn't matter because the terms are so much more important.
For too many reasons, many acquisitions haven't worked out to the buyer's advantage. How do you ensure that the right execution and the success of acquisition?
Well, that's a terrific question because it's a massive problem in the larger deals where there's more institutional buyers. It's also a problem at the lower level where an individual goes in after the acquisition without a bulletproof plan. The majority of these deals, you know when they fall apart? Once a deal is closed, you know when they fall apart post-acquisition? It's the first 90 days. Things just get off to the wrong track and then it's unrecoverable. And so treating those first 90 days like a newborn baby is really important. And here's the recipe. Number one, you do nothing of any consequence for the first 90 days, because the reality is you know nothing about the business. You may have a very basic understanding. You're buying it from someone who may have run it for 5, 10, or 50 years. You can't expect to know overnight what they've known for maybe a generation. You may have some ideas, but until you know the business well, those ideas are meaningless until you have an understanding, because at the beginning, you're on the outside looking in. So the first 90 days is you do nothing. Meaning you want to be there for the seller to train you. You want to be able to engage with the employees. You want to listen, learn, and plan. And then after those 90 days, you can start putting some things into place, but no major changes. So that transition period is so important when you want to go in there as almost like an objective observer. You want to have the seller around for a reasonable transition period, whatever that may be, for as long as you need them to help you learn the inner workings of the business, what they do every day. But similarly, you want to mark on the business as quickly as possible so your training's over. But the observation period and the learning is at least a 90 day.
And finally, what is the next stage of this integration post 90 days?
Well, the way you want to do that is you want to identify and analyze each aspect of the business and find out where you can improve upon things or where the growth opportunities are. And certainly, of course, tied into your greatest skill set. I've always found that the answers come from data, the answers come from the customers, and the answers come from the employees. And so peppering people with questions and for example, with the customers, what can we do better? What is it, what is it going to take to grow our business with you? What do you like and don't like about our company? What do the competitors do that we can do that could make us a better company? As far as the employees are concerned, you want to make sure that they're properly engaged. You want to give them the opportunity and all of the tools to make them more successful. And similarly, if you have some wrong employees in place, you got to get rid of them quick. Don't let your loyalties bankrupt your business. Get the right people on board and get the wrong people off. And so when you speak to customers, you speak to employees, you get them engaged, and then you analyze whatever data you have available, because very often the answer is in the details. And so when you're able to look at that and take a step back, and what I've always found is I try to engage the employees as much as possible. I want them involved in the process, regardless from the lowest level employee right up to a vice president. I want them engaged and I want them involved in the process, because they're certainly going to bring a lot of know-how to the plan of how you move forward. But again, let's get back to what we talked about earlier, meaning you want to make sure that first and foremost, the business sustains itself. And that may be a longer period of running it for the first year, because until you really know it, you don't want to have any massive changes. Some people say, well, what if the business is a distressed business or whatever? Well, I tell them, don't buy it. Distressed business, because that is garbage. A distressed business that you can almost never turn around. It's never ending heartburn. I'm a fundamental believable in buying rock solid businesses that are going to transition well to a new owner. You run them for a while, and then you can start getting your plans in place. But you want to make sure that the continuation of the business, that it runs as it ran before, that's the top of the pyramid. That's what you want to make sure, that at least you're guaranteed the status quo. And then you could always grow as you learn more.
And with this, we have reached at the end of this podcast. Richard, thank you so much for the wonderful insight. And it was great to have you here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on. I enjoyed our time together. Thanks again.
Lastly, I want to thank all the listeners who took their valuable time to listen to this podcast. Keep rocking, be safe, and don't forget to share.
Are you a founder of an early stage startup or the owner of a small or medium enterprise and looking to raise funding? Then please visit
www.jasaro.in. That is www.jasaro.in.